All right, what's going on, everybody? Appreciate you guys for tuning in, those that are watching us live streaming on LinkedIn and YouTube today. I'm your host, HD. And if you didn't know, I am a cybersecurity professional, and this is the Textual Talk Podcast, where we talk about tech news, careers in tech, especially when it comes to cybersecurity, kind of going against some of the myths that are in cybersecurity and breaking down like the different avenues that are in cybersecurity that the person that's interested in getting into cybersecurity doesn't know about. And that's what we're going to do today, when we're going to talk about GRC, stands for Governance, Risk, and Compliance. And we have a GRC professional here who is also doing some other stuff in his career, but I figured this would be a good day to talk about it. GRC is one of those careers that I typically tell a lot of my clients about, like when they're trying to transition. They most of the time have a lot of transferable skills that can go directly into GRC first, then trying to build themselves up with all these other technical skills where you're going to be competing with a lot of people that might have been doing it longer than you. And so that's why I always reference GRC. And I also know there are technical people in GRC as well. So I don't want people to believe that I'm just saying, you know, you'd have to be non-technical to be in GRC. That's definitely not what I mean. But without further ado, you know, let's bring up our guest real quick. Hey, Abdi, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's up, Monter? How you doing, brother?
Pretty good, man. So for our viewers and our listeners, we'll talk briefly, kind of just open up real quick. If you guys want to rare, I think it was like last week, Reddit announced they had been hacked. And like most breaches, it came through phishing. I think they said it was like a highly sophisticated like phishing attempt. And I don't think they said any customers' information or users' information was affected. So that seems good, but we heard that before. LastPass told us that, and you know, we saw how that went. But the fact that Reddit got in front of it so fast, it's cool to me. And you know what? To be honest, what's funny is this happened to me this week, funny enough. Whoever the person is, they didn't, in a sense, like I knew it happened right after I did it. So it kind of was funny to me. But whoever the person was, must either know me or know who I communicate with. Because they sent me an email that looks like from one of my friends where we were discussing some stuff. I didn't really check it, but it looked just like her domain. But after I put the info in, I was like, this don't make sense. So right after that, I changed my password. And the funny thing is, and I'm trying to admit this to people online, because like it can happen to anybody if you're just not paying attention. I think I just did it real fast and I really didn't look at it. And it was like I was on my phone. But the funny thing was, I stay up late at night, and at night I had started seeing this person was trying to like log into my stuff, which is funny, but they didn't realize I had already changed my stuff, and I have MFA. And even if I didn't change it and they tried to give me a prompt, I wouldn't press yes on it, because that's happened a couple of times, even like with my regular account. Somebody was like trying to log on to like my Xbox Live before. But the funny thing was, like, I guess they thought, I thought ahead of this, they thought that my typical email that I use for like info for people responding and stuff like that, they thought that was like the main email address on my website, connected to my website. So I guess they thought they were going to try to use that, and then they tried to request the code to make them account. It was funny. It really was funny to me. And I don't know if they were in Oregon or not, but if you're listening, you know, I'm familiar with your game, like the Shaq meme says. But all in all, I just want to be transparent about that. I think it could happen to anybody. And, you know, sometimes that's why you just got to be vigilant, you know, and pay attention. I mean, just like somebody saying, dang it, I left the keys in the house, you know, in the door overnight. That's happened. It did happen to me. My dad used to do it all the time, but, you know, nothing.
I got hit actually about 2 months ago with it wasn't a phishing email. But it was on my Instagram. A close friend of mine, he DM'd me. And, you know, given that it was the holiday season, he was telling me, hey, man, I'm struggling. I'm going through it right now. I don't have any money for shoes. I got kicked out of my house. Can you send me $50? Most of the time, I'm skeptical. But this is a good friend of mine that I've known for a fair amount of time. Right. So I cashed out to him $50. It turns out his social media account got hijacked. and I got played for $50, but Yeah, man, these social engineers, you know, especially phishing or you know, social media, social media threat actors, they'll play on your emotion, you know. And even me, I'm a cybersecurity professional,
right? Like, that's why I wanted to say that to the newbies, like, it's like, you know, when you wonder how these things can happen, it can happen to anybody. But that's why alerting and tooling is so important to have that, you know, defense in depth that you learn about when you're trying to study for like that good old security plus. Yeah, man, I hope you guys, you know, listen to this and like, you know, hey, if it happened to you, it's cool. Just know that you did it. That's the, I think that's the difference between us. Like, we knew right after it, something happened. Some people think what they did was legit. And that's how they get caught, you know?
Yeah.
It was like a split second right after. And I had screenshotted it. And I sent it to, shout out to Tiara. Like, they made like her business like Solutions by Swain. And so they made a domain like that and send it to me. I was like, me and Tiara were just talking about some stuff. So that's why it's like, it was weird to me. I was like, why would they do that? So I'm actually going to follow up with her next week to see, like, is anybody else she knows been targeted? But besides that, man, we got the man of the hour here. Mr. Abhi, can you go ahead and kind of introduce yourself?
Hey, what's up, folks? My name is Abhi Muhammad. I'm a senior cybersecurity engineer at Lockheed Martin. I actually just transitioned into a new role doing cloud engineering. But yeah, I grew up in San Diego, California. My background is in GRC. My original plan was to become an economist, but I didn't want to become an economist anymore. I thought, you know, getting into IT would be awesome. And I started my first real role in GRC. Did that for about, was in the GRC space for about three and a half years. Now focused more on cloud. And yeah, you know, I'm really big into hiking. I'm a big anime fan. For those of you who are anime nerds, come talk to me. I'm a big Dragon Ball Z fan. I like Yu Yu Hakusho. What else? Bleach, One Piece, you name it. Attack on Titan. I love anime. Anime is life. And then another thing I like doing is going on hikes. I like to you know, keep myself healthy. Going on hikes, tapping in with nature is really fun. I like going to the gym. I enjoy going doing boxing. I actually just injured my wrist about a week ago, but about to get that checked up because, you know, having injuries are not fun. Keeps you away from exercise, and that kind of messes with your mental a little bit. But yeah, that's pretty much me. You know, I like anime. I like trying new foods, trying new ethnic foods, and I'm a big boxing fan.
That's dope, bro. I didn't know that about you, about being the boxing fan or the anime fan. And you named one of like my top three animes when you said Yu Yu Hakusho. That's like one of my favorites.
Man, Yu Yu Hakusho, dude. That's a lot of folks sleep on that one.
Yeah, man. Funny enough, though, the fact that you're a boxing fan, I'm going to ask you this real quick. And I know the people watching this don't necessarily probably watch boxing, but one of my favorite boxers, and I want to say favorite, not the best, but one of my favorite boxers is Adrian Broner, right? And he was preparing for his comeback fight next week. He had been at the ring like 2 years, had a lot of stuff going on with Al Haymon and them. But this was his third opponent. That, like, the first person he was supposed to fight was Ivan Redcash. His promoter got in the way of that. Hank Lundy couldn't fight him. And so they found a replacement late, Michael Williams Jr. Well, a week, mind you, the fight is supposed to be next Saturday, so a week from now. Yesterday, it was reported that his jaw got broke, you know, in training camp, so he can't fight right now. And I guess the fight is either off or postponed. So I'm just like, why? First of all, I was like, I haven't heard too much of people whose jaw skin broke at 16-ounce gloves when sparring. And two, why are you heavily sparring like that a week out from the fight?
That is pretty true. Why are you in the Gladiator Arena 1 week out before the fight? That's crazy.
Yeah, man. It was, I don't know. It's crazy to me. But so you mentioned that you want to be an economist. And so that was like kind of one of my questions for you. It's like, you know, your background before you got into cybersecurity. So talk a little bit about that. And then it's going to lead up into the question, like, you know, what made you want to pivot into cybersecurity?
What made me want to pivot into cybersecurity?
Your background, kind of like, you know, you mentioned economist and some of the other things that you're interested in, and then kind of what made you gravitate towards cybersecurity?
Okay, gotcha. So originally, the reason why I wanted to become an economist was because when I got into undergrad, I realized how interested I was in the way the market works, the way the economy works, the way businesses work. Those topics were very fascinating to me, understanding how capitalism works, how, you know, how inflation, macroeconomics, microeconomics, how the Federal Reserve works. Those topics really fascinated me. And then, you know, eventually after getting my associate's degree in economics, I went to university. And when I went to university, I realized I transferred to university from community college to university. And I realized I no longer wanted to become an economist, mainly because I'd have to go to school all the way to my PhD. So I'd have to get my master's degree and I'd have to get a PhD to make some good money. So I realized, all right, well, if I want to make good money, then, you know, I'd have to major in something that's technology focused. Not have to, but, you know, it's something for me. It made sense. If I want to make the quickest amount of money, you know, fresh out of college, then looking and getting into tech made the most sense. So I looked at all the majors and it looked like economics and management information systems in pretty much a business IT major aligned pretty well. I was missing like 2-3 classes. So I changed my major to MIS. For those who don't know what MIS is, that's management information systems. It's pretty much the study of using information systems technology to solve business problems. I studied that. And then after meeting with different individuals, tech professionals who were, you know, making a fair amount of money. In different fields such as, you know, software engineering, cybersecurity engineering, and network engineering. After talking with these individuals, it made it very clear that, hey, you know, if I'm going to get into a field, it makes sense to most likely pursue cyber, because cyber was emerging at the time. Oh, it's still pretty big and it's getting bigger, but this was back in 2018, 2019 timeframe, and yeah, I realized, you know, I want to get into cyber. What do I need to do? After going to a lot of networking events, after studying for my Security Plus, and I failed it twice, by the way, Honor. I failed it twice. For those of you who fail these certification exams, it's okay. You'll live. All right. I failed Security Plus twice. And, you know, I didn't get it until after I got my first cybersecurity job. But, you know, learning the content of the Security Plus, you know, leveraging my internship experience, and networking with the appropriate people and going to conferences and conventions. That's pretty much how I got my first cybersecurity role. And yeah, you know, I'm gonna admit I did it for the money and there's nothing wrong with it. You know, obviously now I'm much more passionate about my line of work. I'm much more passionate about the field and the community, the people that are in it, but it wasn't always like this. When I first started, it was mainly for money. So if you're trying to get into cybersecurity for money so you can take care of your, you know, your loved ones, yourself, and have a better, higher earning potential, there's nothing wrong with that. Don't let anyone shame you, you know, and tell you, oh, yeah, you shouldn't be in it for the money. Well, come on. Like, you know why we're here, you know?
Yeah, I'm glad that you said that, because you said a lot of good stuff. So shout out to you. Just like me, you figured out, hey, what you're majoring in initially probably wasn't going to make the most sense for you short term, because that's how I feel about architecture. So,
yeah, are you an architect?
Nah, when I got to college, my major was architecture.
That's pretty cool.
I took wood shop and welding in high school, so I was like, oh, yeah, I'm going to be an architect. And I saw how busy they were, how much better and naturally better at drawing and drafting that other people were than me. I was like, mm-hmm. I don't know if I even like it like that to go through this, to just not even get paid the amount that I feel like I should get paid right after I graduate to put all this work in. These people used to go to the architecture building. They were sleeping there because they had all these different projects. So I was like, man, for me, that's not, you know, that's not what it is right now, Chief. But no, I like the fact that you said, hey, you got your cert after you got your first job, because being a career coach, I always deal with different people. They're always worrying about Security Plus. And it's now, matter of fact, I was talking to a gentleman last night, I think on LinkedIn through our messages. And he was talking about studying for Security Plus or whatever. And I was like, you know, that's cool, but it's not really going to help you fare better in these interviews we're talking about right now. It's like, you need to work on those skills that you may be missing when it comes to these roles. And so the fact that you said understanding the content, it's more important than the cert. It's very true, because I tell people like that too. Like, you know, they want people to get the Holy Trinity Network Plus, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, as long as you kind of understand basic networking, you don't need Network Plus. I mean, if you just want to, if you're going to do that, you might as well get CCNA. But as long as you understand it, you know, you're good. So talk about that first internship also, because that's one of the things I try to push people in college for. It's like, hey, let's try to get you an internship, because that's your key right there. Because not only if, like, you know, they may want to hire you full time, but if you do good enough there and network there, they may not bring you back, but the people there may know someone that may need somebody. And that's how you start expanding your network and get better jobs. So can you touch on, like, kind of what your internship was and how beneficial was that, you know, for your career so far?
For sure. For sure. So for me, so I went to school for 5 years. I was in college for 5 years. That's pretty common for people who are like STEM majors, you know, and other disciplines as well. But so for the first 4 years, I did medical records and I scanned medical records at a local clinic in San Diego. And then for that 1 year, my fifth year, that's when I did my internship. The way I got my internship was actually through networking, and I knew someone within a school organizations in college. And as he was graduating, he kind of, you know, handed that internship to me and said, "Hey, you know, you could do an internship on campus where you're working with some basic, you know, IT stuff and doing cool things." And I said, "Oh, cool, let's do it. You know, I don't have an internship. You know, I need an internship." So I did the internship, and I did a lot of different things. I worked on Windows operating systems. I re-imaged computers. I patched some computers. I did vulnerability assessments using Qualys. You know, Andre, are you familiar with Qualys?
Yes, I'm familiar.
So it's like, you know, regular, you know, household vulnerability scanning tool. And although I wasn't responsible for the analysis of the results, my job was to just do the scan itself and then send those reports out, you know, to the appropriate, you know, asset owners and let them know that, hey, they have to remediate this in a certain amount of time. I also did a security awareness training presentation to the people, to the individuals, my colleagues in the office. So I was just one in, I was an intern, but I was working with different individuals who weren't, you know, people who were in tech. There were, you know, think administrators, think, you know, deans, et cetera. So my role was kind of educating them for a period of time on what they can do to make sure that they're safe when it comes to using this technology, such as, you know, security awareness training, like for passwords, make sure your password's strong, make sure it has a mix of characters, that sort of thing. So I also gave a presentation on LastPass too, although they got hit a couple of times in the past year. I believe so, I could be wrong. But I gave a presentation on LastPass, why it's important to have a password management tool instead of memorizing millions of passwords. And it's, you know, I explained it like, hey, this is like, you know, you could memorize one password, right? And then, you know, have access to a bunch of other passwords that you need for different tools, different applications, kind of like a keychain, right? You have a keychain and it has all your different keys. But if you lose the keychain, aka the master password, you lose all the keys. So that's pretty much how I explained to them the importance of managing that one password so you could have access to the rest of your passwords to access everything else within your software suite. So yeah, internships are important. You know, that's how I landed mine. Those were some of the cool projects I did. In my internship, I learned the importance of being patient, because my boss that I worked for, he was the VP of information technology at campus on the university I went to, and he was very, you know, very, he was kind, extremely kind, but he was very structured in the way he wanted things. And, you know, what I learned from him was the importance of paying attention to details, and also learned, you know, the importance of being able to learn and adapt, you know, the FIO, figure it out. That's what he would always tell me, figure it out. I'd ask him a question, say, "Oh, no. Figure it out." And, you know, and having him teaching me the importance of being resourceful, I think it's the most underrated skill in tech and any industry, you know. And I think Andre, I think you've touched upon this before, right? About, I think one of your videos where being resourceful, you just have to be resourceful. If you're more resourceful than others, that's how you get further. That's how you get ahead.
Yeah. Got to be resourceful. And life teaches us that. Job teaches us that, school teaches us that. So yeah, a resourceful person is a person to watch out for. It's
dangerous.
No situation, right? No situation you could put them in that they won't be ready for. I want to shout out my guy Rob from Master IT for the support and the super chat. And
shout out to Rob, man.
Yeah, shout man. Also, so he does do a Zero to Hero IT program. So if you are interested in that, you don't know anything about IT whatsoever, you know, reach out to him. Good material all on his channel, really. Like, if you just wanted to see what he's about, dope guy. But so that's cool. Your job kind of sounded similar to like my college job as well, kind of like being like just a student information technology assistant. Funny enough, though, I don't even know if my little brother's watching right now, but I ended up my boss is still at the same school. Shout out to Louisiana Tech University. And my younger brother is there right now as a freshman, and he's working there now too. And I think their process is a little bit better now. Like they're a little bit more together than we were like back then. So I was like, you know, hopefully he can be farther along than me. That's the hard thing too. It's like when you're dealing with I don't even know if he's considered to be Gen Z or not. He might be, but
It's anything after 96 or 97.
I think it's like 94, 95.
Is it 94? You could.
Yeah. But I don't know when the cutoff is. Like, for example, he's born and his birthday is 2004, so he'll be 19 this year.
Oh, he's definitely Gen Z. Yeah, oh, he's definitely Gen Z.
And then my brother under him will be 18 this year, and then my sister will be 15 this year. Yeah, so I'm the oldest. But what made you? Okay, let's do two things right now for the people that's coming in. Appreciate y'all for watching. Make sure you hit that like button and also subscribe to the channel. What made you, so what is GRC, and then what made you choose GRC in the beginning? You know, because you've been a professional, what, roughly 4 or 5 years now?
Yeah, 4.5.
Okay. Yeah. And so back then, about 4 or 5 years ago, GRC wasn't like, it was known, I guess, by people that's kind of doing it, but it wasn't as talked about as it is now. It's like, GRC has like become like the cool kid now, in a sense. Like, nobody used to talk about GRC, not even me. Like, I recently like kind of found out like it was this own subset of things like a couple of years ago, because it wasn't something that was kind of like advertised a lot. It was mostly, you just probably see like auditor roles or maybe assessments, but you didn't really see like GRC analysts and like those words that you see now, like you see on LinkedIn. So kind of tell us about like what's GRC and what made you want to go the GRC route.
For sure. So GRC is defined as the strategy of aligning IT, information technology, with business goals while managing risks and making sure that your business is operating within the confines of the law. So making sure that you're not breaking the law. That's GRC in a nutshell. There are a lot of different GRC roles out there. There's, you know, the auditor, the policy analyst, people whose roles are, you know, they have to create policies and procedures for an organization, people who have to do security audits, information technology audits that are compliant with certain security frameworks or technology frameworks. For me, you know, to be quite frank with you, getting into GRC wasn't really a goal of mine. I just wanted to get into cybersecurity. And I fell into it, you know, when I started my first role at my current company that I still work for. So it wasn't, for me, it wasn't something that, oh yeah, I want to get in GRC. It was more of, hey, this is my background. These are the certain skills that I had. These are the skills that I have. And I kind of fell into it. And yeah, you know, I never looked back. Here we are today. And it's been great for me. It's been great for my career. Really, you know, working in GRC, you get an understanding of cybersecurity at a 30,000 foot level, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I like that analogy and pretty much how you kind of summed it together. And your sentiment is what I share with everyone all the time. And it's kind of something that I've been saying a lot long, like this year. We've seen tech, cybersecurity, a lot of things kind of change this year to kind of, I would say, probably kind of stabilize, at least for the people who are early career. And a lot of them are trying to be like the people who are 5, 10, 15 years in. And I think that's the issue a lot of younger people are running into. They want to, and I want to say, this is not people who have worked in other disciplines and have transferable skills that could warrant them a high paying role. This is for people who don't have the necessarily job with the transferable skills that they can walk into certain roles, to where you got to crawl before you can walk. And the key word would say, hey, I just want to get in. That's why I tell people all the time, hey, you know, let's just get in. And then once you get in, you can pivot into something else. The objective is to just get in, you know. If the salary, if it could just pay your bills, do it. And then you can eventually get more. There's a lot of people are trying to imitate. That's why I reposted my reel and my YouTube short about, like, you know, the fictional day in the life stuff. Like
on TikTok.
That's why I did that, because I was like, no, this is definitely, you know, not true. Like, the people, if you normally use job sites, and that's why we're going to segue into this question, different type of job sites will tell you about, like, kind of what the average salary is or whatever. It's only a certain percentile that get, you know, higher salaries than average. And their job most of the time is very important. And, you know, most of the time they might be responsible for either creating or breaking or fixing things. And yeah, they might be able to finish their task probably like 4 hours or something like that. However, if something happens, you know, when it's time for the rubber to meet the road, they got to be ready at all times. They might say they need them to fly somewhere, come do this or that. Like, you know, that's the thing. And that's the thing I've always said. Like, I've made a video about kind of like, or talking about some of the things, like, even when people want to come do SOC work or whatever, not fully understanding, hey, most of the time a SOC is a 24/7 team. And based on your level on the team, it could be any given time to say, hey, we need to take your laptop out. We got like all hands on deck situation. And you got to be ready. You could be you could be doing something. They don't care what you're doing, because, hey, you're getting paid a higher salary than most people in the country. So this is what's expected of you when stuff happens. But with me talking about money, let's get into, I think, like I tell people all the time, I've showed people this on my TikToks when I've told my clients about it, and I kind of showed them jobs about GRC and what they could potentially pay. But for you, like we said, like 4 years ago, it's really hard to say, because GRC isn't just one role. It's so many different roles that would go under like GRC. So how about this? Like, I guess we'll say, like, the type of GRC position that you did, what would be like a decent or at least average entry level salary for the type of position that you were doing?
So full transparency, when I started my role, I got 70 in Florida, 70K. So, you know, I don't know. I want to say that would be the average. That's 4 years ago, right? And inflation's up. So, you know, so I'd probably say somewhere between 65 and 75, you know, for entry level GRC roles. And obviously plus or minus, depending on where you live. So if you're in Alabama, you might be making 65 or less. But if you're in like San Fran, you might be pushing maybe 80, 75, 85 around there. But then again, there's a lot of factors plays into a role, you know, your negotiation power, you know, your leverage. But, you know, there's a lot of different things that play into it. Like if you're coming from a different industry, but you have job experience that kind of that does transfer over, and you can articulate that and sell that, and you can charge much more for your first GRC role. But for me, you know, I think 65 to 75 is a sweet spot for average entry level GRC roles, and I think that's a little higher than the SOC analyst roles. Am I right, Andre, or depends?
It depends. Like I think I told people, like, I think for my first role, I think my total comp was like either 75, 78, one or two.
Wow, that's pretty good. Wait a minute. Maybe I should have went the
SOC
route.
but like you also say, it's also contingent on the company where you work at that time.
Yeah.
Technically, that company was Intel, and then they switched and then became McAfee. So it could be different, because I know SOCs that pay people way less than that starting out.
I've heard some horror stories on that. Yeah.
So were you on the West Coast at the time when you got your first role?
No, that was actually in Florida.
Okay.
In Orlando, Florida. Orlando.
Cool. Yeah. No, because like Florida is like, does have like a higher cost of living in certain areas. And so I'm glad that you brought that up too, because there are some companies, and I actually wish they could, I understand why they do it, but it actually just makes more sense for them to kind of get away with it. Like, some companies are smart. They'll pay you just based on where their company is. So sometimes you could get a remote gig and you could be staying, you know, Louisiana, Mississippi somewhere, and they're based in New York or California, and get California and New York pay. And listen. then sometimes they'll try to say, oh, where do you stay, and try to base your pay off of where you stay, which I don't think is fair, because you would pay someone that lives somewhere else to do the same job more, but and we're doing the same thing. Like, hey, mm-hmm. just pay, like, just have, get that out. Like, don't do that. Just pay like a normal thing. And what's going to mess up a lot of people now is California and New York are doing this freaking salary transparency thing, but they're not being too transparent.
Yeah, what's your thoughts on that? I'd love to hear your thoughts on that, on the pay transparency thing with Colorado, New York.
Some companies are actually doing it like the right way. Like, it's have a reasonable range for the salary. Then you see Jermaine posted something. I think the salary went from like 70,000 to 999, you know, thousand.
That must have been a Netflix role, huh?
Man, I don't know what it was, but I was like, yeah. They can't be serious with like doing that. Like,
yeah,
that's stupid. Like, that's too wide of a range to almost pretty much making a meal from a job to start up. That doesn't even make sense. And mm-hmm. I think they're just BSing it. And so that's why I think a lot of people call, like, raise concerns over that. It's like, hey, a lot of companies are going to misuse this when it comes to being salary transparent, because you don't really know what anybody's getting paid. Only way you'll know is if you have friends that do the similar role, and that's how you can figure out what something justified to ask for.
Got you.
And also, guys, ask your questions. We will answer questions towards the end from the audience. That way we don't detract the podcast. So what would be some good, we'll do like this. We'll say skills they didn't need to learn to do like a GRC role. And we'll just really focus on what you do. That way, like, if I ever have someone else that did some in GRC but different, they could talk about theirs. But the things that you did, I know you brought up like vulnerability scanning with Qualys was one, but what are some other things that they could do and learn in order to land a GRC type of position?
Yeah, so, you know, depending on the industry, and, you know, GRC roles, they do vary, you know, depending on what industry that you work in. And there's also the enterprise GRC and also the GRC roles that are focused on, you know, on systems. So I've worked on like embedded systems, think platforms, weapon systems. So my role was focused on, you know, making sure that we're compliant with minimal security requirements specified by our government. So one of the things that you'd have to be really, in my opinion, really good with is being able to read through control text. So if you look at, you know, a security framework like NIST or NIST SP800-53, NIST SP800-137, these the NIST cybersecurity framework, when you're reading these through these documents, in my opinion, they're very dense. There's a lot of vocabulary words used. You know, it's not sometimes it's not plain English. And you have to be able to read through and decipher what they're trying to tell you. And, you know, being able to have a strong vocabulary and being able to, you know, have your thesaurus up and look up definitions of certain words. And being able to draw that picture for yourself or you understand is very important. Another skill that's very important is also the ability to write. So whenever, let's say you're doing a security audit on an information system or like on Windows operating system or Linux operating system, you have to provide justification. You have to provide verbiage as to why this vulnerability or this audit finding is not compliant. You have to type out justification. You have to be able to bend the English, not bend, but you have to be able to use the English language and articulate yourself in a way that makes sense to, you know, your stakeholders, such as your systems or software engineers or directors or VPs, et cetera, where they also understand, hey, this is why this is not compliant. And here's what we can do to make sure that we get compliant. That way we can continue to operate our business and make sure that we're not hit with hefty fines. So, you know, communication is a big one. Being able to verbal communication, written communications are pretty big ones. And Honor, did you ask like what education they should be pursuing as well, or
no? Nah, not necessarily education, because
okay, gotcha.
That's kind of nuanced in a sense.
Yeah.
Like a lot of people have been, whether they believe it or not, have been following policies at their jobs for a while and doing some things that the job maybe tells them that they have to do to remain compliant that they might not be aware of. Like, yes. I don't know if my guy, I think it's Ed is the one who used to be like a CEO and did a lot of compliance type of stuff. Like, I want to say at correctional facilities. And he was telling me about some of the stuff he did. I was like, you have all the transferable skills to do this GRC stuff. You just got to learn some of the stuff that you would need to know to do a GRC role. And so that's what when I say how you got transferable skills, like it's a lot of people who have like a lot of my people that are in banking. They have a lot of transferable skills, especially if they had to do some audits. I had a client, like she's did a couple of audits at her credit union. So I was like, you got these skills. I was like, you should probably get this CISA. And I don't really recommend. Mm-hmm. So how I recommend stuff you should get is based on how many times I see it come up in the job description. And I know based on her experience that would have benefited her in trying to land some type of auditory role or whatever. So learning that, like you broke up some of the, so do this. What would be the top three frameworks that they should know? Just bare minimum. They don't have to be an expert on them, but knowing them enough to talk about them in an interview so they can have them on their resume. What would be the frameworks that they should know to get into GRC?
Yeah, so frameworks an individual should be familiar with. Again, it really depends on the industry, but just off the top of my head, understanding the NIST cybersecurity framework, I think that one's pretty good. Understanding the PCI DSS payment card industry data security standard framework, I think. Well, can I even say it's a framework? Is it a framework? I guess it's a framework. PCI DSS, and then also understanding HIPAA. So all three that I just mentioned. For those who don't know HIPAA, that's the Health Insurance Patient Portability Act, and that one's focused on making sure that healthcare data is protected and healthcare data is quote unquote secure. So each one I just mentioned is focused on it's information security, but each one's focused on minimal security requirements based off of their industry.
Funny enough, well, not funny, but ironically, the also thing about two of those frameworks you said, you could specialize and niche into them and make a career dealing with strictly like PCI, or if this we go true. With HIPAA, or we throw some of the other ones out, you got like things like HITRUST and some of these other frameworks that have been released. You could niche down into those, so that's the beauty of like just getting your foot in the door and saying, I really like dealing with like medical, type of data information. Let me go see what else I can do in HIPAA where you can either start consulting or whatever you want to do. Mm-hmm. So that's why, like in your beginning of your career, you'll probably be more of a generalist, but once you start niching down, you're going to have a certain skill set that not too many people have. And it's going to always require you to have a job or at least be able to find another job fairly quickly. So, and we got somebody else saying some other, stuff in the comments, so you guys take these notes about that. So what are like some of like the most, and we talked about this kind of when we opened up the pod, but what are some of the most significant risk you see that are facing businesses like today? Like what are some of those when it comes to a compliance type of thing?
So I think This is a lazy answer, but obviously humans are always the biggest risk, right? So for the GRC, when you say GRC, the first thing that comes up is governance, right? Top-down strategy. It focuses on culture of an organization. So I think, the biggest risk is, is not having a culture of security awareness, a culture of cybersecurity where the leaders of the organization, we're talking C-suite, they make it very clear that cybersecurity is a priority for them. And they create that culture all the way down to their middle managers, all the way down to the operational people who are in the trenches getting things done. So I think, given the biggest risk is humans and given that the biggest risk is making sure that you have a strong security culture in place, having a strong security culture in place is important. So top down, I think having a culture of security awareness is probably the most important thing, especially when you're talking to GRC, governance is number one. So
dope. So how do you keep up with like the latest cyber news and cyber trends when it comes to your job. And I know that, you know, we'll talk a little bit later, kind of like what you have pivoted into. So people can know that when I just say you can start somewhere and pivot, that I'm not just
talking
about. But how do you, what do you use or some favorite sites you use to kind of keep up with the news, things that are happening in cyber that you may have to bring like to your manager or teammates' attention that you guys might have to look into based on your job?
So for me, mainly, I'm going to be honest, I go on YouTube. And, you know, I look up, you know, different YouTube channels. Some of my favorite YouTube channels is Gerald Olger's Simply Cyber, where he does this daily cyber threat brief. And he goes over the daily, you know, like what's going on. The daily cyber threat brief is pretty much what's going on, all things cybersecurity in the news, what big hacks just happened, what new vulnerabilities were discovered, you know, what industry trends are happening within our line of work. So it's kind of a one-stop shop. That makes sense, Henry. So I used to go on different websites, you know, and see what's going on. But now, you know, I'm a lazy person, to be honest. So I like just going on one YouTube channel, right? And just like, boom, right there. And also Tech Tool Shatter. You know, you learn a lot there as well. You know, I'll be honest. It's crazy, man, how far your channel has come in the past few years, you know, and just seeing, you know, the different types of individuals that you bring on as well. It kind of keeps me up to date on what are the emerging skills within the industry? What are the top skills? What are the hottest skills? What roles are being created as we continue to adopt new technologies and as we continue to move forward as you know, businesses?
Yeah, I definitely have like a lot of underrated people like that'll be coming on the show soon, like all different types of people for that. So that's the reason why I asked you that too, because that's also an interview question, right? They'll ask, oh, hey, how do you keep up with cyber trends or whatever? So
this is true.
I give like two easy short answers. Like, also, guys, you want to join my Slack space? I believe the link is always in the description, but I have a Slack space, right? And one of the channels is Security News. And I had an RSS feed from, I think, NIST in there, TechCrunch, Bleeping Computer, Digital Shadows, Krebs on Security. It's a couple other ones, right? So it's kind of like the way, like, if you just have, like, you can set up where you can go subscribe, have your mailing list, say, oh, I get all these emails from all these different places. And that's how I keep up with everything. Also, like we mentioned earlier, Reddit is a good place to keep up with trends, Twitter.
Like Reddit is solid.
YouTube. So those are some ways you can keep up. So you never know, you know, what'll come up. Because, like, for example, I don't know if you saw it, but I reposted on LinkedIn that, hey, Kia and the Hyundai has finally like updated the vehicles that like people could just break in. And I think they could plug, when I was thinking the Kia boys could just plug a USB into the car and start it or something like that. I could be wrong, but I watched a documentary, a little short video on like how the Kia boys were stealing like all these Kias and Hyundais. Is they were just like getting into the vehicle and it was like fairly easy for them to steal it. And that's another one of those risks.
Scary.
3 years ago, my vehicle got stolen without them having to break anything. I don't know how they did it. They must have had like a sophisticated rangefinder thing. You know, my car at the time, well, now all of them like kind of like push the start, but they found my signal in the apartment, which where I was staying at is not super close to the parking lot. So I don't know how they like pulled the signal from as far away.
Right. Like from the key fob?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
They pulled a signal and they have a clone right there. So it takes my signal. So the car mistakes it as that. Open the car, so they start it and they drive off. And that's how like they steal certain vehicles. But that takes a lot of money. But that's what they were doing. It's like, this is I had a Nissan Maxima. I still miss that car. But
RIP.
Yeah, man. That's her nickname was Maxine.
Shout out to Maxine.
But this is a good question too, because we kind of covered this already. We kind of covered the skills, but if you were to tell someone they need to get a certification, or what would you recommend type of certification for someone to get into a GRC position? What would you recommend for them to get that would probably like help them fare better to try to land a role? Because there's a couple people I've seen in the comments saying, well, hey, I'm doing this right now, but I want to transition to GRC. Like, what would be some certs that like some fresh people could get that could help them out?
So for those who are new, so if you're trying to get into DOD, Department of Defense, having an IAT level one certification, and this is the DOD 8570 guidance on what certifications you would need to work on certain things. So Security Plus, you know, if you want to get into DOD, Security Plus is a good one. Again, you know, understanding the content is much better than, you know, getting the certification, not understanding the content. I just want to emphasize that. But the Security Plus, getting, you won't need it before you get the job, but the expectation is once you get hired on for a role, you'd have to get a Security Plus within a six-month time frame. That's for DOD. Now, if you wanted to get into like consulting, like Big Four, we're talking like Deloitte, KPMG, we're talking, what's the other name? Forget the other names.
Ernst & Young.
EY, there we go.
And PwC.
PwC, there we go. So, you know, if you wanted to get in those type of roles, GRC roles there, you know, pursuing the CISA, I think is a good one. I have a couple of friends who work in that space that do, you know, security auditing type of roles. And, you know, the CISA, I believe, was a requirement for them to pursue to continue to do their work. CISA is a good one. If the CRISC, I don't know how entry level that one is, but, you know, I think you might need a little bit more experience for that one because, yeah, that one's a little dense. CRISC, the certified risk information. I forget what it was called, CRISC. And then there's another one with ISC squared. They used to be called the Certified Authorization Professional. They now changed it to Certified in Governance, Risk, and Compliance. So that one you could also look into as well. But, you know, I think the main ones I would look into is either Security Plus, it becomes certifications, Security Plus, and also CISA. Oh, did you mute? Can't hear you.
Yeah, I did mute, my fault.
No, go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah, I was saying every time you said certified, I thought about Certified Lover Boy.
Certified Lover
Boy. So that's dope. So we'll ask this question kind of like, what is the most challenging part of working in GRC? Because me and you talked about this. What's the most challenging part of working in GRC? And kind of like, what are some of the challenges that you face that you kind of experience in GRC? And, you know, just saying, talk at a high level without, you know, saying too much.
For sure. So, you know, so working in GRC, I've noticed the big challenge is when there's like a wall between the GRC teams and the development or systems engineering teams, those technical teams. There's like a wall in between, and that wall is the technical acumen side of things. So I've noticed, even for me, I'm guilty of this too, that, you know, the GRC teams, they would say no, or they would poke holes at a problem, and they instead of just identifying the problem and being a part of the solution, the auditor just points at and says, hey, you're non-compliant, go fix it, and go run away, go fix it. And I think, you know, that type of way of working as an auditor, I don't think it's the most effective to improving the security posture of an organization. I think, you know, when an auditor has the technical foundations, the auditor, like, for example, if I'm a cloud auditor, right, cloud security auditor, and I understand cloud, when I'm talking to cloud engineers, you know, platform engineers, cloud DevOps engineers, you know, when I'm talking to these individuals, they understand that, oh, no, this individual is not just an auditor who's just trying to tell me how to do my job. This individual actually understands cloud, and they understand, you know, what's going on. They actually speak the language. And now we can both, you know, have a conversation that focuses on how can we solve this problem together instead of me just coming in saying, hey, you know, you have a problem. Like, imagine if I'm coming up to you, Henry, and I say, hey, your shirt is dirty. Well, can you get me a napkin? There's ketchup on your, like, I keep telling you there's ketchup on your shirt. Can you get me a napkin? Help me out. Help me solve the problem. I don't think, as you know, in life, you know, you don't want to be the person that's always pointing out problems. You also want to be a part of the solution as well. So I think one of the challenges in GRC is making sure that you're keeping up with technology, you're understanding the systems that you're auditing, you're understanding the tech stack. And granted, you, as a GRC professional, you don't have to be as good as a software engineer when it comes to programming, but you also have to be able to read a line of code. You know, you have to be able to, you know, look at, you know, you have to be able to understand what are our basic ports and protocols, right? What is HTTP? What is, you know, DNS? What is, you know, what is Secure Shell? Why wouldn't you use Telnet? Why would you use Secure Shell instead? Understanding these things, you know, when you're having these conversations with the engineers, it helps facilitate these conversations, and it gets you to a conclusion faster and much more effectively, instead of, you know, pointing at the problem and then running away, tell them to go fix it.
Yeah, man. Look, all that, Tom said, can you give me a napkin? And just looking at simple things that could be fixed that they are hesitant on, not even the person you work directly with. It's following up command and they're not trying to fix the stuff, and or sometimes you have to do other people's jobs, and it just, you know, irritating. Let's not even forget to mention the meetings. I've been going like kind of crazy on TikTok lately, like stitching videos that I agree with. And I was talking about how like the meetings sometimes are totally pointless. You know, unless it's a meeting that I need to know, like fill me in on something, it's totally useless. And a lot of times I know my previous role was like I couldn't really even do stuff because like too many meetings, to where I was just like, I don't even want to look at the computer anymore. I zoomed out. That was the thing I think I talked about a while ago, like a couple years ago on the channel, about like how Zoom fatigue is real. And people understand that. not to mention if they make you have to keep your camera on and trying to look at people. I think that's really I don't want to do that. Like, please leave me alone.
No, it's like that, the laugh out of you over a period of time.
Yeah, man. Tell me about it. But I think I had one more for you real quick. This is one, and then we'll get on some other stuff. What kind of advice would you give to someone that wants to go ahead and get started in GRC, like right now? What would be what would you tell them?
I would tell them get on LinkedIn and connect with any GRC professional that you can and pick their brain. Also go on YouTube, look up GRC roles. Try to do your research and understand what the role entails. I know online you won't get all the answers you might be looking for, but you'll get a fair amount. I'd also, if I wanted to get into GRC right now, I'd also look into, you know, the different frameworks. You know, I wouldn't, maybe reading all through all of them is not the most effective use of your time, but understanding why those frameworks exist in the first place and understand how they ultimately help improve a business, I think that's pretty important. Understand too that, you know, being a GRC professional, being a compliance professional, you know, compliance, you know, being compliant doesn't inherently mean that, you know, you're secure, but, you know, you have to remember these, you know, the security compliance frameworks, they exist in the first place, you know, as a bare minimum, because companies before these things existed weren't even doing the bare minimum. So in a sense, it does improve security a bit, but, you know, obviously, just being compliant doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, that your company is secure in a way that's most effective for you to continue to operate your business. So all that to say, you know, definitely do research, connect with, you know, professionals on social media platforms who are in the GRC space, get to know them, get to know their stories, get to know what skills made them stand out and how they got into that. And then also make sure that you're doing research on your own as far as, you know, what frameworks exist and what industries do I want to work in. Is it healthcare? Is it fintech, finance, banking? If that's space, you know, understanding the different frameworks there would also be beneficial as well.
That's dope. Focusing on industry is a real big one that a lot of people seem to kind of conveniently leave out. But let's talk about this. So, guys, primarily of Abdi's career has been in GRC, but now he has transitioned to the future. He's working in cloud as a, I want to say you're doing cloud engineering, or is it security cloud engineer? Which one is it?
So yes, I'm doing full-time cloud engineering, but there's elements of my role that does have cybersecurity in it that I have to be cognizant of.
Okay, cool. Because one of the questions, you know, I have for you is what's a typical career path for someone like in GRC? And I want to let you guys know this too. And Abdi, I think I told you, but those questions, well, some of the questions came from me, but most of them came from ChatGPT.
That's crazy. Wow.
Yeah, man. ChatGPT is very good at structuring things. So if you need help structuring a paper or scripting out a video or making templates, email templates to send to people, or it's very good at those things. To me, it's not good at some other technical things, but it's good at those things. But talk about that now, because like I said earlier in the episode, I was talking about, hey, let's just get in and then you could pivot into something else. Because a lot of issues that the new people face is a lot of times they are trying to go after a role that they think they like, realizing they may not like it when they get it.
Mm-hmm. This is
but
the thing.
When you get in that role, you might find something that you actually like. And so, yeah, talk about that. Talk about, how were you able to pivot from doing GRC roles to go pivot into the cloud? Did you have to, get any certifications? How did you network to get in that role? Because also, a lot of times people reach out to me, I want to go do this job, blah, blah, blah. And I say, okay, have you talked to the people in your current security department at work to try to go there? Mm-hmm. Because it's easier for them to hire internally than for you to go be external somewhere else. If these people already know you have a good manager that vouches for you, have you tried that? So touch a little bit on how were you able to attain this, in a short time span? Because people, believe it or not, cloud hadn't been out that long. They might try to say you need all this experience, but cloud hasn't been out that long, especially recently. I mean, cloud really just heated up as well.
For sure. So yeah, for me, as I continue to grow my GRC career, I realized there are a lot of, technical gaps in my skill set as far as, understanding cloud infrastructure and also looking at, where the industry is headed. So more companies, they're migrating their on-prem applications to the cloud. Now, there are different cloud strategies out there, right? There are startups right now who they're cloud native. Everything they do is running on the cloud. But, for companies that have been existing for a while, most likely they have a hybrid strategy. They have some on-prem environments, but they also have a cloud environment as well. So it's hybrid, a mix of both. So for me, I kind of looked at the market and I asked myself, okay, what skills, what's gotten my interest and what skills do I think, would I need to be able to, to compete in this marketplace and also have, I won't say job security. I don't think job security is a thing, but more like career security, that what skills will keep me employed? What skills can I charge for so I can continue to take care of myself and, continue to grow in my career? And cloud made the most sense. Cloud is, for those who don't know what cloud is using traditional IT resources over the internet. And, cloud is one of those things too, where it's blowing up. It's blowing up. It's becoming more and more prevalent. More companies will continue to adopt that. So for me, I started doing research on, cloud service providers. I decided to go the AWS route mainly because they have the biggest market share. And also, you also have to consider, if you want to pursue a cloud service provider, ask yourself, what is my company using right now? And I would go for that one. That way you can internally pivot to a cloud role. It's much easier, as Honor was saying, it's much easier to pivot into a role within your company than it is to go from internal to go into an external company, because there's a lot more that goes into that. So I did pursue some certification in the cloud. I got the AWS Certified Cloud Practitioner, AWS Solutions Architect Associate, the HashiCorp Terraform Associate. Man, I might be butchering that one, but I'm butchering the name. But yeah, I got a HashiCorp one that's focused on Terraform. For those who don't know what Terraform is a tool it's an infrastructure as code tool to programmatically build out your infrastructure for cloud environments. And I pursued these certifications You know, I networked within my company. I'm also in a leadership development program at my company. So for those who don't know what a leadership development program is, it's programs where companies invest into their early career employees. And the idea is that these employees, they get, you know, exclusive leadership development training from executives, from, you know, high level individual contributors. And, you know, they rotate, they change jobs on a periodic basis. For me, I change jobs every year. For other leadership development programs, other companies, it might be 6 months, it might be 8 months, it might be 9 months. But, you know, if you're early in your career, considering a leadership development program, it might not be a bad idea to get to establish that strong foundation in your skill set for your, you know, long-term career. But yeah, you know, I did, I'm in LDP program. So making that pivot wasn't hard, Henri, because I had a certification. And, you know, and I told, you know, when I'm having these conversations with managers, say, hey, I might not have the skill level you need, but, you know, I have all these other skills that could be a great contributing factor to your team. You know, working in the GRC space, working in the cybersecurity space, I leveraged that. And I said, hey, you might need a, you know, an engineer who has a fundamental understanding of cybersecurity and how important that is as a cloud engineer. So, you know, I leveraged that, leveraged my certifications, and mainly being in a leadership development program, that's also some leverage you do have, because, you know, managers are more willing to invest in you and, you know, take their chances on you for a role because you're in a leadership development program. And mind you, the leadership development program that I'm in, it was a very competitive leadership development program. I'm not trying to toot my horn here, but like there was had like 300, 400 applicants, only about like 25 got in the year I applied. So it's not easy to get into leadership development programs from my perspective. So companies see that you have potential and they invest on that potential. So, you know, when you're in these type of programs, it gives you a little bit more leverage.
That's dope. That's dope, man. If everybody looking at me scrolling down, I was listening to you, but I was trying to find something. It's this meme that I seen on LinkedIn that I had posted on my Instagram, and I think
I love the memes.
It was the one. It was talking about how AWS is make a body. Here it is. I found it. Let me. I'm gonna share it real quick because it's funny. It's one of the things where like shout out to Miosha. We had the episode about cloud support engineering. And even though nice. She loves AWS, she advised everyone, hey, Azure is probably easier for you to start to learn because it's just the stuff that's in Azure makes like more sense.
I think the services, they name them, right? The way they name the services actually makes sense for what it is. It's AWS, mm-hmm. The naming is just all over the place.
Right. Let me see if I could, I know I could find this like this.
And Azure's heating up too. I just wanted to share that out. Like Azure's heating up like crazy. I'm seeing more and more job postings with Azure. So you can't go wrong on picking one cloud service provider, but Azure's catching up. It's catching
up. Here it is. This is like AWS. I got cool names for my services, like Greengrass and Beanstalk. And then Azure, I name my services after what they actually are so people can understand. I think that's facts. But that's dope that you said that and how you were able to pivot, and salute to you for beating out a lot of the competition that they see a leader in you, right? I think that's a lot of things people don't understand. It's like one of the things that you're getting out of this is also visibility.
And yes, lots of visibility.
In my advanced your cybersecurity career course on LinkedIn Learning, go check that out, by the way. I talk about how you can do that, getting more visibility by presenting and showing your knowledge of things, become the subject matter expert so you can move around or work with these different teams so they can also start vouching for you, because that's what helps you out. When everyone else goes to like your manager and then over them is like, yeah, that guy, he's killing it, and you're new, man, it makes all the difference. Let's get into, we had so many questions. I'm going to try to see if I can get them. Like, shout out to the chat, man. Y'all really been rocking with us today early on. I know you guys got a lot of stuff to do on a Saturday, so I appreciate y'all for that. Let's see. I know one person was talking about, where she's at. I think she was a nurse. I didn't show this one, but I'm showing my guy again, Master IT. Y'all go follow his channel.
Yo, shout out to Master IT. I actually used some of his courses for my studies, and his YouTube channel has so much value. much value for people trying to get into technology. I love the way he teaches too. He teaches like very, very direct. Very direct, right? It's not vanilla. It's not bland. He has a little personality in there. So shout out to Master IT.
That's the Detroit in him, man. That's the
Detroit. He's from Detroit. That makes so much sense.
Yeah.
Shout out to the good folks in Detroit.
This one guy said, Wagwan family. I can't say it like how y'all say it, man. I don't know how to say it like y'all, but I know exactly how to interpret it. I'm 18 with 3K say, what should I do with it? And should I go to college? That's a loaded question.
That's a loaded question.
No and yes. It depends on what you're going to college for. I would advise you, like I tried to advise my baby brother, hey, go to community college first because it's going to be cheaper. And those community college courses come with like certifications a lot of times. So you can have some certs out of those courses and possibly go to a bigger university. Maybe even get a job before you at the bigger university. Finish. Let your job pay for the school, pretty much. That's what I'm trying to say. So try to figure out, leverage all your options and make the best decision for you to where you don't have to like come out that 3K. Because 3K for an 18-year-old is a lot to be saved, especially when you're being 18 and your earning potential somewhat capped because you don't have that many skills yet. So I don't want you going out there just burning the money just to go through school and possibly still have to go find a job. I want you to kind of be strategic in this. And I have a video on my channel right now, like how to get in cybersecurity in 2023 with no experience. Definitely check that out. That'll pretty much kind of answer your question on how you should move and what you're trying to do. What about you, Abby? Any advice for him?
Yeah, you know, I think you hit the nail on the head with that one, man. You know, going to community college is a cheat code. You know, and if you qualify for financial aid, even better, right? But just understand,
he probably will.
You know, most likely. You know, so and being 18 with 3K saved up, I didn't have 3K saved up when I was 18. So you know, kudos to you for being disciplined and you know making sure that you're taking care of your resources, your money. But yeah, I think going to community college and landing a role. You could definitely do that by getting, you know, the appropriate education and certifications in community college. I think our friend Day did that. Day went to community college and he's been killing it. For those who don't know Day, that's Day Cyberwalks. What's his YouTube channel, Henry?
It's Day Cyberwalks. Day is a superstar, so everybody knows
Day Johnson. There we go.
Everybody knows Day Cyberwalks.
So that's what he did, and you know, I've seen other students do that too, and it really gets you ahead. Mm-hmm. It really gets you ahead.
So EJNYC says, "What's a good way or a platform for entry level GRC folks to display their talent?"
Good way to display their talent.
I'll kind of go first. Shout out to my. Shout out to my girl, Destiny Stanton. We had a consultation this week. But even before that, she reached out to me like weeks ago and just asked to do. She went to my channel and saw what I said to do in that how to get in cybersecurity with no experience. And she's been killing it. You know, she'll come to me and I'll say, oh, maybe you should like try doing projects and stuff like that. So every time like she's on LinkedIn, she's worked on a project or something over the weekend where she's detailing what she studied and she's making projects. So she's really marketing, documenting, which helps when it comes to interviewing because you're going to remember more of the things that you learned by documenting your journey. So you can always show off with your own like website, portfolio, and just start doing things and implement things and just also asking people in the field, hey, what are some things I can learn? What are some like realistic projects I could do that would, you know, resemble something that I'd have to do in this job in actual, you know, in the real world. Like, what are some things I could do for that? And that's how you figure out how to platform and how to display your talent. I take it as you agree.
Yeah, I agree. I think that's definitely it. You know, for GRC roles specifically, you know, what you could do is you could go on the DISA website. So for those who don't know what DISA, that's the Defense Information Systems Agency. And they have these things called security technical implementation guides and security requirements guides. So they're called STIGs and SRGs. You can download these STIGs and SRGs on your computer, and it gives you guidance on how to harden your systems. So what you could do, let's just say I have a Windows operating system. I'm going to download the DISA-STIG, the security technical implementation guide for a Windows operating system. And I could go through each control and harden my system. And when I'm in an interview, I can talk about, yeah, I downloaded this security guide that had different, you know, security controls based off of various NIST publications. And, you know, I was able to harden my system and make sure that my system was, you know, cyber secure.
Yeah, that's pretty smart. Pretty smart. Glad you told him about that, because shout out to my guy. He been in the chat all day, Professor Black Ops. He's talking about Stigs all the time. I was like, man, I ain't never dealt with Stigs before, but he's to bring it up because he's been in the game since he's been like in 30 years, I think he's been in the game, man. So
he's seasoned. Yeah. Shout out to him.
So King says it's 50 to 60K, a good starting salary with 10% annual bonus for a fully remote incident analyst. So we're looking at either 55K or 66K. It depends on where you're at. I would probably say I honestly would say it's hard for me to tell you if you're not making that now, it's hard for me to say that's not a good salary for you. I would just try to research and see if that's their first offer. I will always negotiate, because you just always negotiate. but I would assume this is like a maybe incident response role. I would probably say lean closer to that 70-80 mark for that role of that magnitude. That's what I would say for entry level.
Yeah, I think that one. If I'm making 20K or 15K a year, you know, 50 to 60K, that jump is big. You know, I'm not saying that's how much you're making right now, but you know, it just really depends. And also, like, it depends on the role too. Like, if you're working 80-hour work weeks, I don't know if 50 to 60K is what a 10% bonus is going to make sense. Again, you know, when you're on a salary, you know, a lot of times you don't get paid overtime. But again, it really depends. Like, I'm not doing, let's say I can get a job that pays me, you know, 250K, but I'm working 90-hour work weeks, 100-hour work weeks. I don't know if that's the most effective. That's most effective for my mental well-being and my health. I don't know if my mental health or my well-being is even worth that much. You can't really put a price tag on that. Right?
Yeah, man. So that was the benefit of, like, when I used to work at Optiv, it was so dope, was that we didn't get overtime, but they gave us holiday adjustments if we worked on a holiday. So pretty much it was
like, that's amazing.
Time and a half. So and the holiday would be dead. So I was just volunteer for all of them. Easy money, man. So
that'd
be a good check. Let's see what else we got. Shout out to Samantha. She's been trying to get into GRC Raw. I need to follow up with her. She was talking about when we were talking about that ride.
Netflix. Shout out to Netflix.
So Adam Nicole says, I'm a nurse trying to transition into cybersecurity. Is the GRC route a good starting point? Yeah, I mean, you work with HIPAA a lot already. So I definitely would look in that. It's a lot of things that nurses have to do protocol wise that could transfer over. So I definitely would probably look to stay in healthcare and try to transition into GRC doing something in healthcare. That's what my advice would be to you, because you already know the industry.
Yeah, straight up. I agree, Honor. That would be the greatest, you know, play you could make. You know, getting like your cybersecurity role, you have to look at it as a game of probabilities, right, Honor? Mm-hmm. Like, you have to look at it. There's not a magical bullet. There's not a certification that's going to guarantee you a job. There's not a degree that's going to guarantee you a job. It's a mix of different things, but, you know, you're playing a game of probabilities. So the reason why Andre and I keep saying, you know, look at your current industry, because the probabilities you land in a role within your current industry, given that you have a background in it, is high, much higher. Right.
So it makes more sense for them to hire you. Somebody asked, was your GRC role work from home?
No, I was in the office for most of it. Then obviously with the pandemic, I was working from home for about 8-9 months. And then, you know, after that, I got into classified cybersecurity work where you have to be on site. So if you want to do any classified work, understand that the probability of you being on site is very high due to the nature of the work that you're doing.
Yeah, man.
But now I work full time remote. So I like it. It's cool. You know, I'm doing cloud. I do full time remote.
Let's see. All right, this is an easy one to answer. Is there a lot of GRC roles within the federal government? Yes, they are.
Plenty. I'd say also, though, too, like GRC roles, there's much less competition in comparison to a SOC analyst role. Mm-hmm. Like the SOC analyst roles, honor, when I look at these job postings, my God, the competition is fierce.
Yeah, man.
Fierce. I've been doing this for a long time.
Because they want you to know so much stuff about it. Who is this right here? Torn between GRC and cloud security. I have a background in email security. I like to write, but also like cloud security and advice. Remember the old Morpheus meme? What if I told you? What if I told you you can do both? What if I told you you could be in GRC and work with the cloud? Because the cloud has this sort of like, even reviewing policies for the cloud, something simple as making sure, hey, the SOC and everyone else is notified when someone makes an S3 bucket public. As small as that is, that can turn into a big event if it's not checked in. What's going on in the environment? Why is it public? Even though after years, I think AWS came out talking about, hey, we will finally be making buckets private, you know, by default, which they should have always did.
Yeah, I agree. But shout out to AWS for making that change. We love you.
Right. Let's see. Yeah. Who else in here? It's like a lot of people said something. Is it tough to pivot out of GRC? What skills can be transferable? We kind of talked about that earlier. And the reason also why I say, like, you know, you still could be technical in GRC, because I say roles like where they have a whatever the Venn diagram is, but I feel like they fit in the scope of being in GRC as well. Red teamers, vulnerability management, you know, assessments. Technically, they are doing things according to seeing, hey, what's vulnerable, what's not. And they have to do it based on whatever the frameworks of doing these things. Hey, this thing says this needs to be, you know, mitigated or patched or done like this. So you don't necessarily have to be the person that's writing all day, even though some of those fun roles do require you to write reports. And that's why you got to be writing. But now you got ChatGPT. It can help you out. It can help you make like a default pen test report and other things you may need to cover. But just be leery of, and this is what I want to tell people too with ChatGPT. Don't put your confidential company information in there. You don't want it to have access to that. So always try to get specific enough, high level enough to where you can just copy what it gives you and then you can use that at work. Don't put your stuff in there.
Yeah, great point, Andre. So I would say was it hard? Well, that really depends. You know, it depends on where your current skill level is at. So if you were a person like a GRC, like a security auditor for on-prem environments, and now you're trying to go to cloud, you know, there's a learning curve there, understanding, you know, what cloud infrastructure is, what are the different, you know, tools, common tools that are used in a cloud environment. So there is a learning curve there, yes. But I think, you know, the cool part about it is working in cybersecurity in general is that once you land that first role, because by the way, the first role is the hardest one you'll get, in my opinion. But once you land that first role, it's much easier to pivot into other roles. So I wouldn't say it's hard to pivot into other roles. I would say it's the learning curve is dependent on how much existing knowledge you already do have. But is it doable? Yes, it's doable because I've done it.
Yeah, man. D'Amico's Chamber says, what key skills would you suggest for those without a degree to work on in their labs to create strong enough cybersecurity skills to get hiring managers' interest? For me, that depends on what you want to land. Like, that's why I tell everybody, hey, what job you want to land? Focus on that. And normally, when they do that, they're a little bit more successful because I can't just tell you, oh, go learn this and this, and you're not trying to do that. You have to go learn the skills on the job description. That's your study guide. That's your cheat code on how to get there. You do that, then you can start networking. That's why the biggest thing I tell everybody, when you're at a deficit in talent, skill level, networking is going to be an equalizer. People like to work with
you. Great equalizer.
If someone doesn't like to work with you, you won't get hired. It doesn't matter how good you are. Everybody got to say yes when it comes to getting that offer. So remember that. Remember that. And that might be a video for another time.
This person, yeah, I agree with Sean, right? That was good.
Syed said, I'm working in non-IT job. Is cybersecurity the right choice to aspire career in IT industry? I would say for you, you have to figure out what's your why. Do you want to do that? Or like, once you figure out why, then you can figure out if it's good. But there's definitely still an uptick in the need for cybersecurity jobs. But you just got to figure out what you want to do. Let's see. We're getting close to the end now. Judah says, can you speak on how AI is affecting GRC or anything to keep an eye on?
That's a good question. So I'll be honest with you. I've not been tapped in too much with the artificial intelligence space, but from my minimal knowledge, we're going to see more automation, more tools when it comes to GRC. The thing is, you have to remember though, that, you know, with artificial intelligence being introduced, you have to ask yourself, what skills do I have? You know, that how can I use artificial intelligence to supplement my current line of work? Mm-hmm. Right. You have to really understand that what parts of my job can be automated, what parts of it cannot. There's always this human aspect of you know, working in GRC that in my opinion, that cannot be automated. I just don't think, you know, there's human aspects of our line of work that, you know, automating it would not be effective. That's just my opinion. Again, I don't have a bunch of data, research, and diagrams backing this up. But I recommend, though, if you are going to be working in GRC and you are contemplating thinking about artificial intelligence, you have to make sure that, you know, you have to make sure that you understand that there are parts of your job that could be automated, like the audit itself. But like, I don't think we're near that yet. I think there is some time before we get there. But also, you know, you just have to be cognizant that you have to ask yourself what parts of my job cannot be automated, and focus on those skills, those people skills. You know, let's just say the audit portion. I mean, there's already tools that are automating audits already, but like, let's just say, like the creation of policy is being automated. Well, do you still need someone who knows that policy through and through that can speak on it, right? The person that communicate with different stakeholders as to why, hey, you know, this policy is significant for our organization, here's why. So there's always a human aspect of our jobs that I don't think is ever going to go away. But I will say there is a lot of automation coming. And, you know, we just have to make sure that we're skilling up and making sure that, you know, we have to asking ourselves, how do we make sure that, you know, we're not as disposable as we can be? I don't know. What do you have to say about that, Honor?
No, I agree with everything you said.
Yeah.
We got this person. Let's go. Nick says, as a mailman, what can I put down on my resume to show some skill? Just like I was talking about the other roles about compliance things you guys have to follow when delivering mail. Like, I know, for people that deliver to apartments, certain things like people can't be in the mail room when you're putting the mail in. And there are probably other things that you guys have to do. I can't answer that off the top of my head because I think I've only worked with one person that's been like working for the Postal Service. I actually have to really sit down and look at like your day-to-day, what you do, and see actually what it correlates with. So I can actually tell you, okay, these things will transfer over there. And you've been doing this for like 5 years, so you can highlight that in an interview. But then what you have to show skill in is the things that you want to do. So you have to go through and learn those. And I'm saying like a robot saying this, that's going to be like 99.9% of my answers when it comes to what skills or how do I show skills or what should I learn. I'm going to tell you that like every single time. Let's see. Can y'all speak on which career pays more, going cyber technical route or GRC? I mean, but that's the thing though. It's like, that's a very nuanced question to answer because I've seen some GRC roles that pay a lot of money and some of them can pay a lot of more money than a technical role and vice versa. So I would say it depends on factors of company, need for the company, how valuable is the skill set when it's supply and demand. So those are, I think, the things that kind of come into mind when it comes to, like, you know, hey, what's the benefit of this? Because think about it, there's a lot of companies, like, they go through breaches or things happening. They go out there and get those GRC folks. They either hire a company to come in and do those audits or seeing, hey, what happened, what we need to get better on, consultant, and they're paying them a lot of money.
Yeah.
So it really depends. It really depends. I think it depends on the company and the structure, because at a big four, you're probably making a lot of money out of them, because they do that a lot.
I totally agree with you, Andre. You have to keep in mind too that there's combination. You have to look at combination of skills that are very unique, right? Yes. So let's just say you have a lot of technical acumen, like you know automation, you know how to script, Bash scripting, Python scripting, and you're really good at compliance as well. That combination of skills of understanding compliance automation, oh my God, you'll make a lot of money, because there aren't that people who have strong business acumen, strong GRC acumen, but also understand, you know, the technical side as well. The more niche your skill set is, the more you can charge for your money. So as Andre said, it really depends, but you have to ask yourself, what skills do I have and what combination of skills do I have that is very unique? Because I'll tell you this right now, having strong technical acumen, the best GRC professionals I've seen have strong technical acumen, but they also have great business acumen as well. They know how to communicate, written communication as far as verbal communications as well.
Dope. I was over here looking at some questions. We're going to answer like two more.
Okay.
Derek L, we kind of just answered that, so we won't cover that. We just answered that question. Khalil Crypto, we've kind of answered your question too about what kind of role you should do, so I don't think we're going to ask that, just because we can't really answer that for you. It'll be based on what you want. And if you wanted to go to a lower barrier entry type of industry, GRC would be that. I can tell you that, just because everyone still doesn't know about it. But it might be the best fit for you. This person said, what would be transferable skills for someone with a property management or administrative background to get GRC? I think it's the same thing as other roles that I talked about. We got property management or somebody that has an administrative background, right? You guys have policies. You have to enforce on the tenants, things when it comes to them, strict guidelines when it comes to them applying for apartments. A lot of different things. I have to research all property managers do. I didn't want to just minimize property management to apartments, but also like probably managing people's like real estate portfolios and stuff like that. But there are different things that you do that could transfer over. Same thing with administrative background. So you do have those things. Let's see if we got one more. Okay, someone says, do you think idle project management and Scrum Master are sufficient complements to GRC? I mean, I would believe so. I believe they help, especially idle. I think that would help a lot. Let's see. Okay. It seems like now that people just having conversations in the back, which is cool. Let me do this for our viewers real quick. All right, guys. It's Saturday. We're not trying to keep y'all out here too long. Abby, you got any last words you want to give the viewers right now?
Yeah, so for those of you, you know, who are trying to get in that first role in cyber, you know, that first cybersecurity role, and you're trying to go the GRC route, just understand, you know, cybersecurity is a competitive field, right? You have to understand that, you know, getting that first role is not easy. Anyone who's told you that it's easy, either they're an anomaly or they're lying to you. But it's not easy. It took me 8 months, 8 months of me applying for jobs to finally get my first role. And that was, you know, during my senior year in college. I've seen some people get their first cybersecurity job in 6 months. I've seen a few people do it in 3. I've seen a lot of people, it takes them more than 6 months, you know, of working hard and diligently. So understand that, you know, good things take time. And if this is something you do want to pursue, understand you're gonna have to pay the cost up front, make that investment, and, you know, eventually, you know, you will get the outcome that you're looking for.
Yeah, man, that's dope. Somebody asked us about DBZ versus Yu Yu Hakusho. It's a toss-up. I mean, it's not a toss-up. I think the story in Yu Yu Hakusho is way better, and it's shorter and more concise. But DBZ is just so nostalgic that it's hard to count it out. But also, guys, you've been looking at the ticker on the bottom of my screen. I'm talking about my Elkster wallet, and this is it right here. So it's pretty cool. Got a little button, pops my cards out. My cards, money clip. It's very slim for the fellas, so you can put this in your pocket. Like my analytics, a lot of guys watch this. So if you're tired of a bulky wallet, check out the Elkster wallet, Elkster.com. Use textual chatter to get 35% off on that. And yeah, you'll be styling and profiling. They'll be like, oh, I like your wallet. But no, like always, man, I appreciate everybody that showed up from LinkedIn or YouTube showing up to support the channel. I hope you really took a lot of value out of this episode. Be more to come. Probably have Abdi back another day where we might have since everybody's still here right now, like there will be times on the channel where I might eventually start just streaming me playing a game, or it might be a time where Abdi and I are on here maybe just talking about our favorite animes, you know. So there will be other things I will do on the channel to where we'll actually bring up maybe some people in the chat if you guys want to come up. So those are things I am planning on eventually. So, you know, just sit back and keep on supporting, and I definitely got y'all. But like I always say, man, I appreciate everybody for supporting me. And for the future listeners, make sure that you go ahead and leave a review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify. Really helps out the growth of the show. And yeah, man, we just need the reviews. All these people that watch on YouTube, we need y'all to leave the reviews in the podcast streaming apps, you know, so I'm saying, so we can grow some more when it comes to the downloads. But as I always say, man, let's stay textual with your boy HD, and I'm out.